Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This is the Mischief Makers podcast, and I'm Charlie Russell, hosting brand new episodes, chatting all things Peter Pan goes wrong.
And we're recording in Los Angeles. Today, we're going to be looking back at our nearly 6-month stint in the USA with Peter Pan Goes Wrong. And I'm delighted to say that to help me do that, we have Henry Lewis and Jonathan Sayer. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, how are you doing? Very exciting.
It's really nice to meet you.
Very good.
Thanks for having us on the show.
Imagine if we'd done all this work together, but we never truly met.
No, always worked virally.
Well, for those who are new to Mischief and the podcast, we have met before. Would you please now tell me, you know, what your roles are in the show and in the company, just for those who are new to all of this?
Of course. So I'm Henry Lewis. We're currently doing Peter Pan Goes Wrong, and I'm one of the writers of that show, along with Jonathan and Henry Shields. And I'm in the show as well. I play Robert Grove. John and I are also directors of the company as well.
And who does Robert Grove play in Peter Pan Goes Wrong?
Robert Grove plays a variety of roles. Mm. He plays Nana the dog. He plays Peter Pan's shadow. He plays Starkey the pirate. And a couple of other roles that I'll leave as a secret. Mm. You can find out when you watch it.
Very good.
I'm Jonathan. I'm all the things that Henry said, except I play Dennis Tide in Peter Pan. And Dennis plays John Darling. He plays the pirate Smee, and he very briefly plays a mermaid.
Beautifully done, by the way.
I think so. I think it's a very good portrayal. And the mermaids are on rollerblades. It's quite a fun part to do because you get to skate across the stage. And here in LA, the stage is much wider, so I have to traverse a lot more ground at a far greater speed, which is quite fun.
I get to watch it every day and it's an absolute pleasure.
I nearly made myself sick yesterday.
What?
Because,
what?
Because so this is a really, really weird, specific problem on the show that I've been battling all the way through, which is if I really fly across at speed, the mermaid hair goes in my mouth, like quite
Nice.
A lot of it.
Okay. And Is it in any way toxic?
No, I just swallowed like a lot of hair.
Ew.
Because I also have to shout, yeah! As I go across and all the hair went down my gullet. And it was really horrible.
You never really know the problems that mermaids have until you kind of hear about them. So if you're a mermaid and you have a solution for this, get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to hear from mermaids. Thank you. And just in case it's, you know, this is new to you, I'm also one of the original creators of the show, original cast member. I play Sandra, who plays Wendy. Obviously. So this year in 2023, we've had the pleasure of bringing the show to Broadway for about 5 months. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
And now we're in sunny LA at the Arminson Theatre until about mid-September. But going back to New York for a minute, it was our second time on Broadway for us three at least, which was very nice, wasn't it? But did you notice anything particularly different from the first time we were there, 2017, with The Play That Goes Wrong, to now 2023 with Peter Pan Goes Wrong?
Yeah, I think quite a few differences, actually. I think, like, the city is slightly different post-pandemic. I think that probably it's just got back into the swing of being fully open. So I think there's a slight difference there. I can't quite articulate what it is, but there's a slight difference. But it's been quite exciting, I think, to be part of Broadway's first, I think, first full season properly back, or that's what people have said. So that's been quite an exciting thing to be involved in. I think there's definitely been more, the show's had more visibility because people are more aware of the Goes Wrong show and they've seen Play That Goes Wrong, and Play That Goes Wrong has been running off Broadway for a number of years. So that's been quite nice because the audiences have been more consistent, I would say, and they've kind of been in on the joke from the start rather than being like, oh, what is this? Which I remember last time people were kind of discovering the work for the first time.
Right, yeah.
And then personally, I think we're all just a little older, a little wiser. I've found it a more, I've definitely been calmer this time around. I've also lived a little further out in New York. I didn't live right in the melting pot, which was good. But it's been a lovely time.
Yeah, I know what you mean about, I definitely this time around didn't, I just knew a bit more about New York as a city in the first place. Whereas when we went in 2017, it was the first time I'd ever been to New York at all. And this time I was like, oh, there's more than just that pizza place on 8th Avenue.
Yeah.
Like, I knew to go a bit further out and visit a few more places, which was nice. But also, I kind of, last time it was like, oh my God, we're in New York. We never know if we'll ever be here again. We've got to go at 100% of the, you know, at 100% capacity, 100% of the time. Got to make the most of it. And I kind of got strung out last time. Whereas this time I was better at going, you know what?
Well, I just go to bed, yeah.
Yeah, I need to go home.
Oh, sure. Also, Charlie has a unique gift for making friends.
I do.
So I think that what I've found, and this is with less of that gift, but like I felt more like a New Yorker this time around because I know people in the city, not just from the show, but I've got kind of pals. So I think this time around, I felt more like I live here.
Yeah.
Whereas last time, I really felt like I'm a guest here. Like I felt like an honorary New Yorker, which I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, that's nice. How about you, Hen?
I think, yeah, I mean, I definitely think the like, the tail of the pandemic has been different in New York than it has in the UK. Like, it was still kind of felt like, it still felt like it was very much kind of, like, front and sort of centre of people's minds when we arrived kind of March, April time in New York, which was sort of strange because in the UK just it didn't feel like that at all. It was like going back to kind of London sort of in like 2021, you know, and so interesting. And I totally agree that, like, I think just a different experience from, like, almost like the first time we did Play That Goes Wrong, it felt like, as you said, like it was like holiday times, right? And I sort of on that trip did lots of the kind of main tourist stuff, the museums and things, and so this time it was more about kind of doing just the kind of more regular city stuff, like finding new restaurants and all that kind of thing. And it felt more like I sort of legitimately lived there, although I did still live, I lived at the same place, which is a building nearby the theatre.
That works for you though, doesn't it, Hen? You like
I that? Enjoy, like, I enjoy a short commute because I have quite a long commute in the UK.
It was the shortest commute imaginable. Like, yeah. Henry,
just without giving away his address, it was a literal stone's throw.
Yeah, you could see the theatre from my window. That was great. And Greg suggested that if I had a zip line installed, I could do it even quicker and just zoom down.
Fully in costume as well.
Absolutely, just land
on to stage. Ready to go, dressed as a dog.
Definitely, yeah.
Flying dog through New York City.
Yeah. No, it was... So that was great. And I loved... sort of heading back, you know, in between shows, you kind of go home and chill, and that was nice. It was a joyful run, as John said, it was so nice to kind of give New York audiences the next kind of installment of Mischief.
And right,
yeah, it was cool to have people kind of like it. Sort of the audiences felt familiar to it. That was really so nice.
We had lots of return people because the Play That Goes Wrong has been there ever since. Well, it was on Broadway for like a year and a half, 2 years?
Almost 2 years.
Almost 2 years. And then it's now in New World Stages, so you can see it now if you go to New York.
Yep.
In a really great space that suits it. Almost, it's closer to that kind of the Duchess stage that we have in the West End, a little bit smaller, a little bit more intimate, but therefore you kind of you feel really close to the action, don't you? And that's still going, which is so nice. So when we got there, there was this group of people who are like the American counterparts of us, sort of more attractive and more healthy, younger, and probably more hardworking. Not maybe not including you two actually, but they were so lovely. And we were like, oh, here's like another little mischief family who we could hang out with.
I think that's what I mean. There's like last time I felt like we were coming into someone else's community.
Mm.
And almost like we had to like earn our stripes to be there, or like, or at least that like you had to like work quite hard to meet people. Whereas this time around, I've really felt like we've got our own little ecosystem out there, or out here, I should say.
Yeah,
and that's been super cool.
In July, there was a very cool evening where we had drinks with all of the Peter Pan Goes Wrong guys doing the show on Broadway. The off-Broadway Play That Goes Wrong team doing Play That Goes Wrong at New World Stages, and the new Play That Goes Wrong company who were rehearsing in New York before going to Washington, D.C. to do a month there. And, like, just to have everybody together and stuff and three mischief companies in New York was really, really cool.
Really cool, wasn't it?
I'm just kind of watching people who'd been in Play That Goes Wrong throughout the last 4 or 5 years and seeing where they were at with their careers, because lots of them are in Broadway on... Yeah, we're in Broadway shows as well.
Right, because we had people who were a strange number of actors from the Play That Goes Wrong were in Leopoldstadt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And not just Play That Goes Wrong. We had Jenna from the Comedy About Bank Robbery who'd done that in the West End after us. And it was like, how is Leopoldstadt?
A lot of similarities.
Yeah, those two shows.
Stop Hard, you know, if you can do farce, you can do Stop Hard.
You heard it here first. In terms of New York, like I was doing at the end of all the other podcasts, like, oh, what are your tips for New York? And we're not here now, so at the end of this one, we'll be like, what are your tips for LA? But was there anything you discovered this time around that you would recommend people do, see, eat, visit?
I went to, yeah, like restaurant-wise, definitely. Like yeah. I went to Nizza, which is like an Italian restaurant on 9th.
Yes, I heard of Nizza. Actually, I never went in the end.
That was amazing. Really good Italian food. I'd never done Five Napkins Burgers before this trip. Oh, and they are pretty good.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they're very nice. And then, yeah, I mean, other stuff. I did the High Line a couple of times this trip. That was really nice.
And it's been extended, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of... When I went before, it was kind of, I don't know if it was new, but it was definitely less lush. Now it's kind of fully grown out. It's kind of like proper kind of trees and everything everywhere. It's really, really nice.
Mm.
And another, like a touristy thing I did do this time was Summit, which is, if you want to see the city from above, I really recommend that. It's like, it's an observatory at the top of the Vanderbilt building, and it's kind of but it's got like mirrored floors, and it's all quite visually quite kind of fun.
Ooh.
Particularly at night, if you go up there and look at the city, that's quite a fun thing to do.
Mirrored floors, like, should one be careful if one is wearing a skirt?
Yes, definitely. It's probably it's a trousers place,
I'd okay say. Yeah, 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 yeah. A trousered place,
that's the subtitle place. Below the
summit. A trousers one place.
Yeah,
yeah, a place for pants.
How about you, John?
So I lived on the Upper West Side. So I kind of got to get out of the tourist bubble.
Mm.
So I would say a really great place was that you introduced me to when we first got there was that Artisan Coffee place.
Oh, yeah.
It was just called Artisan Coffee. And I went there almost every morning, run by this amazing woman called Anna. And just really, really nice coffee. Really, really nice people. So I loved that. I went to a place called Mamon's, I think it was called.
The cafe with the cookies.
Yeah, with the
cookies. So it's a little chain, but there are a few, and there's one, oh, Mamon.
That was great. There was loads of really good, like, just really, like, Zabar's, just really good places where you can get a bagel, just really good food places. I really, if you go to visit, I really recommend going to the Upper West Side and going down kind of Columbus and Amsterdam and Broadway, because there's loads of restaurants there, but they're more where the New Yorkers eat.
Yeah, there was. I went to Blossom on Columbus, which is an entirely vegan restaurant. And then on the menu, it's like, oh, you know, mushroom bacon. And you think, oh, is it really bacon? And they're like, everything is vegan. And the amount of times you have to be like, is this got egg in? And they go, everything is vegan. And it's incredible. It's so, so, so tasty.
Same with PS Kitchen. We went there. We had a meeting there. And that was all vegan food. And it was I'm not vegan, but it was amazing.
Very, very good, wasn't it?
Like, really, really good. Also, I tell you what I also would recommend, and I don't know if it's going to be there for much longer, sadly, but we had an amazing day at Doors of Divergence, which is like
oh, yeah.
a sort of, it's like immersive theatre, escape rooms, and choose your own adventure stuff all rolled into one. It's in Brooklyn, Doors of Divergence. It's absolutely amazing. And if you like that kind of thing, it's very, very cool. And I think, yeah, maybe not there for too much longer. I saw on Instagram the other day.
Okay, so, check it out.
So definitely go and check that out too.
Okay, very cool.
I went to the Met for the first time.
Oh, very good.
That was very cool, just talking about doing touristy things. And then I suppose just going back to your earlier question, which was like, what have the differences and changes been?
Mm.
The last time I went, I was not married and didn't have a child. And this time I've been here and I've been married and I've been a dad, which also just changes your outlook and changes the activities that you do. So the other thing that I would recommend is the Children's Museum on the Upper West Side, which is a really lovely day out. And if you've got like a newborn, which is what we have, then there's like a sensory experience room at the top with like ribbons and stuff. And then if your child is like one or two or three or four, there's also just loads of stuff where they can, you know, get in a fire truck and they can touch stuff. So I really recommend that as an experience. It's very, very good.
Aww.
There's like floors and floors of it. There's an outdoor water room. And yeah, it was just really, a really magical experience.
I must say congratulations. I mean, you know, being a dad, being married. Well done, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Huge congrats.
But if we had to take another show to New York, like, is there any particularly you'd be excited to bring?
Ooh.
I think, you know,
about a bank robbery would be super cool.
Yes, I mean, that's obviously set, you know, it's set in America. So I think that would be it. That would be a good one, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I'd like that. Although I'd be so nervous about the accents. Right, they would rip us to shreds. So I think we were all right enough for an English audience.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure we'd fool the Americans.
Maybe not.
But it'd be worth the shot.
For sure, definitely.
I'd love to suspend from the ceiling. I think the back wall sequence, if anyone's seen the comedy about bank robbery, there's a great sequence that involves a very big shift of perspective for the audience, physical perspective. And I think that would go down a treat. Mm-hmm. An absolute treat.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, but you two have been working together, of course, last year on Mind Mangler.
Mm.
You like, so you're a little double act now.
Well, yeah, so this is a show that just me and John do, and it's Mind Mangler, the character that I played in Magic Goes Wrong, and Steve the Stooge, who John played in Magic Goes Wrong.
Although he wasn't called Steve back then.
He's changed his name. Yeah,
he's slightly
different, isn't he?
Why did we change the name? I can't remember. It was for a joke.
There's all sorts, because he has different names throughout the show, and I think there was a clash with another name or something. He couldn't be called. It was confusing for some reason, so we changed it. But he's slightly different as well. He's a slightly different character, isn't he?
I think he's slightly less knowing in this version of the show. He's not quite Dennis, but he has more similarities with Dennis this time around. I think there's just for the nature of some of the scenes, he needs to be a little slower on the uptake for some of the jokes to really land. But that's been a lot of fun. We've done that. We did a big tour in the UK just before we came out here. In fact, like we at one point simultaneously. There was a kind of very, very hectic 4-week period where we were finishing off the Mind Mangler show and doing this, and that involved a lot of flying back and forth and very, you know, jumping time zones remarkably quickly.
Yes, you did very well, I must say. I was very impressed on the day that you arrived. You flew into New York and came straight to a rehearsal. And then did you do a show? Henry, did you do a show on a day that you arrived?
I don't know. I don't think I've... No, I didn't...
Nancy did, I think.
Oh, maybe I did on...
You did
no, I think I flew
time.
Back. I think maybe on the second time I did. The first time, yeah. No, I remember the first time I arrived on a flight. early morning flight and then got into New York, maybe arrived in the afternoon or something, three, came to do a tech, literally walked in the building and they were like, oh great, you're here, we can do the falling out the window bit. And I was like, oh great, yeah, they're growing, fantastic.
we did this week on Mindmangler where it was, I think it was 6 venues in 7 days. So we were basically moving every single day.
Yeah.
The show would finish and we'd all just, so it was more like a kind of stand-up schedule or like a kind of, yeah, like it was less of a traditional theatre schedule and more something you'd find on the comedy circuit, where we were doing kind of 2 nights, 3 nights, but we had this one week where every night we were on the move, and we at the end we did the Leeds Grand, the
Leeds.
We did Hull.
It's Hull New Theatre.
Hull New, and then we finished in Bromley. And we did this.
What? That's very far away.
We did, yeah. So like we were also in Nottingham. Like we did so many miles. It was during the train strike as well. So I yeah. drove almost all of this week.
We did Southampton that week as well. So it was crazy.
Yeah.
The travel, like up, down, all over.
Yeah.
It was mad. Like it was mad. It was. We were traveling every day. You know, on a train quite far.
We just had a baby as well. Not me and
the
Hen,
two of
obviously.
You. Yeah, your baby that you.
Like, I was just so tired. So like. I'm quite good at like regulating my emotions, but I just remember being so incredibly emotional during that week. but we got to Bromley.
Yeah.
We did the show. We finished. There was a problem with the trains and the tubes, so we were delayed. We got back to Waterloo, I think it was. Got a taxi back to our separate houses, but they're quite near to each other. Packed for New York. Had like 2 hours sleep, and then very sweetly, Henry's dad picked us up.
He did, yeah.
At about 4 in the morning, drove us to Heathrow. We got straight on the plane to New York, landed at like 11 a.m. New York time, and then got a taxi. The most terrifying taxi driver, the guy was driving us whilst on Zoom. I've never experienced it.
Oh, yeah.
He had his phone like pinned to the side and was on Zoom. But then we got we went straight from the airport to the theatre and then just begun the tech. But in fact, no, the child, sorry, I'm getting all my things confused here, because at that point the Jesse Joy wasn't born.
No, this was before. Yeah.
We did that, then the tech, and then
but
I
it was flew back. It was imminent, it was on the way. You had that like looming over you. You didn't quite know when it might happen because there's a load of stuff. I mean, yes, that's pretty epic. I feel like I didn't know all of that.
It was crazy. It really was crazy.
Really crazy, yeah.
The Mindmangler tour was amazing. Like the audiences were absolutely fantastic. And I want to give special mention to the stage management team on that show, because they did so insanely well to move that show every day. They were in early, getting it all set up, lighting, sound check, everything. And then they were there after the show, packing it down, getting all, it was, and then running the show and stuff. They did so well.
And often doing their own driving and travelling great distances on buses and stuff, because there was no transport.
No trains, yeah.
And if there are any Americans listening, like the Brits will know, but we like our trains in the UK. Like trains really sort us out.
Yeah.
We're not into the. Everybody can drive on the motorways, but if you want to get across the country, it's actually the easiest by train. And I definitely get reliant on it. And when the trains are down, I just go, oh, I can't go anywhere. I feel like completely lost.
I drove London to Edinburgh.
Oh!
No, London to Glasgow to Edinburgh, then back to London for a show, and then the next day drove to Liverpool.
But there was no train strike at that point. That was John's decision. The drive to Edinburgh was an active choice. That wasn't out of necessity.
Oh, you've been outed,
and
John.
Everyone was rather surprised you made that decision. You also lost your car keys in Edinburgh.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I did. I'd left them in the gym.
So
I was very fortunate in that respect.
Edinburgh was a joyful stop. We were in Edinburgh on Burns Night.
Oh, what?
Which we learned actually is more for the tourists. When we spoke to the genuine Scots, they were a bit like, no, we don't really do that. But we did go to a haggis house and had haggis and whiskey, and that was absolutely delightful, yeah.
That's great.
I had some carrots because I don't eat meat. I had this kind of carrot-based haggis.
It was a carrot-based haggis. It wasn't just some carrots. They weren't like, here's some haggis for you, sir, and here are some carrot sticks for you.
They just kind of chopped it up. They weren't it was a haggis and whiskey place. Mm. So they were like, oh, we don't really get a lot of people who don't eat haggis in here. But that's kind of our USP.
But there are versions now in the in Scotland where they've done like a vegan or a vegetarian version. But they didn't. It wasn't so.
They didn't have that.
So developed. Okay, interesting. I mean, you two must have to. You must get on quite well. I mean, I know you do. But the
John and I, we spend quite a lot of time together.
We do.
So you know, it's just as well that we're pals.
But we were actually talking about the because we in fact in LA this is usually me and Hen share a dressing room
right
as well, and we have our own dressing rooms here. But I find that we gravitate to one another's dressing rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that a secret for how we're able to spend so much time together is we're very, very comfortable in each other's company. So we can just sit for vast hours almost without saying anything if that feels right.
That sounds like a really good marriage.
Mm. In many ways, that's what we have.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, I think it would be... Well, because when you spend as much time together as John and I do, and like when you're especially travelling together and stuff...
Yeah,
I think you've got to. Yeah, it's sometimes good to just be kind of, you know, chilled and, you know, listen to music or whatever together. Or
I mean, you do actually have partners, other partners.
We do. Yeah.
But in a way, you two are the main love story of mischief. Really. I do think of you as the Duranis. I mean, I'm just going to say it now. Like when I watched the My Mangler show in London. Back in the sort of winterish time?
You saw it in February at the Garrick, yeah?
Yes. And it was quite exciting because I think because it was a one night in London thing, we had a lot of people who were very excited to come and specifically see you, see the show. They knew about, you were like celebs. And you got this response that was much like what I can only imagine the sort of two Ronnies might have got if they'd done a live show. And then the two of you up there, I was like, wow. Yeah, they actually really have been working together for about 15 years and they really know each other, and this is a really good show. I mean, I've always thought it was a good show, but your relationship with each other on stage is so special, and clearly it's sort of fed by how easily you work together off stage as well. And it's quite special to watch. So if anyone ever gets the chance to watch Mind Mangler, member of the Tragic Circle, I really recommend that you do, because it's a little bit... I imagine one day you'll be saying to someone younger than you, you know, I saw those two live once. And people go, no, really? The way if I speak to someone and they say they saw Morecambe and Wise, I'm like, whoa.
Oh, high praise indeed.
That is high praise. Thank you. That's very sweet of you.
Yeah, I mean it.
I mean, well, I don't know. But
look, I got you all nervous.
We're all awkward. We're all sat awkwardly around this table now.
We're very British. None of us know what to do with the love that is sat in our table, much like this bear claw that John has brought for us.
It does look like quite an event.
And it looks delicious.
It's a bit overwhelming, isn't it? There's so much going on with that.
There's a lot going on.
Covered in
sugar. Shall I have a bite of it?
Oh, my God,
yeah. Should we do it on the podcast?
On the podcast, biting of the bear claw.
Oh, my God. I don't even know where to start with it. It's huge.
I think you kind of you rip it. I think it's like a tear and share.
Tear and share.
I think that's what the kind of...
Oh, hello.
Oh, it's like a pan of chocolate inside.
It's a kind of sort of like horseshoe-shaped big pastry with... almonds and icing, for those of you listening, and I'm gonna bite into it now. Here we go.
Oh,
yeah, it's good.
And it's really like good. You're not eating it at all. You're just doing the sounds of someone eating a walk.
No, it's in there. I'm not feigning eating it. I'm not like,
This is an awful audio experience.
That's good. This is how all audio should be, just people eating things.
Oh. It's actually probably my least favourite thing in the world would be to listen to people
eating
food.
Yeah, you don't like the sound of mastication, do you?
Mastication, I do not.
What?
But the other thing, definitely.
Big fan.
Love the sound
of that. Major fan. Yep. Oh my goodness, I've gone bright red. Far too much has been revealed.
Very quickly, now we've all had a bit of bear claw.
Oh, well, you haven't had any bear claw, but I'm having some now.
I think I'll have that later.
Oh, it's really good, guys. You should
I'll have a tiny bit.
Isn't it nice? It's kind of like, what's it like?
I'll have a tiny bit.
It's a bit breadier than like a croissant or...
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's not like a pain au chocolat, really. It's more like a...
if a pan of chocolate and a Danish had a child, then you'd kind of be looking at this.
A tiny bit spongier, but that might be just this style.
Mm.
The sweet icing on the top, very good.
It's from a little independent store called Whole Foods, which is, we're in LA, we're downtown LA, and LA is very cool, but the bit that we're in is kind of, there's not such, if you're going into, you kind of get a car to a lot of places in LA, so there's not a huge amount where we are. We've got this lovely hotel that we're living in, and then there's a Whole Foods across the road, and that's there's not a huge amount of other stuff.
Well, I'm sold. I'm on board with the bear claw. Absolutely excellent.
Bear claw.
Moving away from the bear claw very quickly. What? Just to say that going back into this show, because we've not done a big long run together for quite some time. And I think I've doing this and also doing Play That Goes Wrong in the UK when we did that 2 weeks back, I've been really reminded... We did 2 weeks back in Play That Goes Wrong.
Oh, I see. I think you meant like 2 weeks ago. I was not there for that. Oh, no, I missed it.
Oh, no, we didn't. Oh, we forgot to ask Charlie. How dare you?
But you didn't get anyone to replace me, so there was just a gap.
No, it was really, it was quite awkward, actually. Very stilted
performance. I knew it felt weird.
Sorry, yeah. No, we did it for those 2 weeks.
I was just kind of throwing that back to everyone that I think that I've just been reminded how wonderful our chemistry is as a group on stage and how much kind of... synergy there is and kind of how much unspoken stuff that happens every single show. And also, particularly doing Play That Goes Wrong, but I would say here as well where there's been a huge amount of recognition from the audience. Something has happened in the pandemic and it's been really odd because I would say pre-pandemic, we were doing Magic Goes Wrong and we were doing Grown-Ups. And probably at that point... there wasn't a huge amount of recognition for us as individuals. I'd say it was more like, oh, we're watching Mischief, but it was all about the show. Yeah. And I'd say that post-pandemic, because the two seasons of The Goes Wrong show have come out and we've been doing a lot of stuff online during the pandemic, there's more recognition for us all as people.
Yeah.
And that just if you're a listener and you've kind of been at one of our shows in the last kind of 1.5 years and you've been part of... that really warm reception we've had. It means a tremendous amount. It's been so lovely. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for the warm applause.
I appreciate it. I love a bit of applause, I've got to say. know? If I have a day where I haven't had any, it's just tough. I find it really hard. But also, something that I get a lot of feedback from is because we did various different ways. We did Mischief Movie Night streamed. So like at the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, but also the summer of 2021, we did Mischief Movie Night In, which is our improv show, if anybody doesn't know. It's a long-form improv show where we improvise a movie. And you could stream it, and that was super fun. And we would sometimes, when restrictions were a bit looser, we could have some live audience as well. But sometimes I didn't do this one, but you guys didn't even have anyone there. So you didn't have any feedback. And yet it was streaming and it still worked. And I think maybe that's why, like, we kind of entered people's homes in a time, creating something strangely live in a time when you couldn't access something that was live.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think as well, like, there's quite a lot of people that mention it at stage door, kind of saying, well, thank you, you got us through the pandemic, or thank you, you gave us a little dose of normality. And the only reason I mention that is my immediate response is kind of to thank the audience, because I actually think we all kind of gave each other something quite special in that time, because we just had a little window in the day where obviously things didn't feel normal, but we went to work and there was that kind of after show buzz and you could think about how the show went. It was quite strange, particularly the no audience versions, because the setting that we were filming in, the comedy bunker, was quite a sterile environment. You know, there's a lot of constant cleaning, like
had to be always fogged, didn't it?
Tested before the show.
Yeah, like an antiviral fog.
Oh, I thought you meant just, you know, there was a fog.
There was a fog. There was a mist.
That you insisted before, Henry.
Got my personal fog.
Oh, Henry likes personal fog.
And you had no idea if it was, you know, all the camera team were in, like, essentially like in hazmat. They were like masked, like double masked with like screens on and stuff. So it was quite a strange environment.
And there was so much testing and everything was very, very safe, right?
Yeah, very.
That's quite challenging too.
Yes. No, yeah, for sure. Like, to kind of be in that kind of medicalized setting and then to be playful and funny, you've got to kind of work at that, I think. But the really fun thing as well was you had no idea what the audience thought until you got home and scrolled through social media and found out. So it was a really unusual experience, but...
Yeah, I remember doing it in the Riverside in the summer. And what was also really cool was that rarely at that time could you be feeling that thing where everyone comes together to do the same thing at the same time.
Mm.
And, you know, now with streaming and TV and stuff, you know, we all watch TV shows and we all talk about them, but rarely do we all sit down at the same time like we used to, but, you know, in the old days. Event television. Yeah. And it was nice to kind of feel as though... Oh, not only is everyone watching it, but also like there are people across the world who have all tuned in at this point. So there's a connection that we'd all lost because we couldn't travel or we couldn't do stuff.
Yeah.
And there were people we know about you guys who have contacted each other like over the internet from like who live in America and England and like India. And then everybody sort of connects and becomes friends. And that's cool. You guys are cool.
I really remember like, such a fun thing on that was when we did the live movie night, I think the following summer or something, was it maybe?
Last year in Edinburgh.
No, it was one of the Regent's Park shows, which would have been what? Summer 21, maybe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
yeah, and I remember there were three girls there who'd become pals, and they said, oh, yeah, because we were all just, they didn't know each other. They're from different parts of the country. They'd stayed on, they'd watched Mischief Movie Night in as the live Zoom audience. And at the end of the show, they'd stayed on the Zoom call and like just got chatting. And then they met up and they became pals. And then they were like this like group of friends. And then they all came to see the show live in London. It was really cool. Such a nice kind of story.
We had that in New York, actually. Sorry, I'm going to cough. Hold on.
I'll cough as well.
Very good, Henry. Very good.
That was quite weird, wasn't it? I don't know why.
I wonder if this will be cut out, to be honest. That was just for us.
I think that's gold. I think we've got to keep that in.
But the bear claw was a mistake, John, on purpose.
It's quite like it claws it's at claggy. The throat, doesn't it? It's claggy. It's claggy.
Sort of still there.
A claggy claw. Yeah,
yeah. A claggy claw.
Clawing. Anyway. but at the end of New York, we had, I think Nancy saw it, or Ellie or something, that there were people on the internet putting on their Instagram stories, you know, if anybody's a fan of Mischief and are thinking of coming to the end, the final show, and want to sort of meet up beforehand. So it meant you might go on your own, but then like make new friends and watch the final show on Broadway together.
Mm.
I think that's lovely. I mean, just, you know, public service. Practice safety and don't give out your personal information to people you don't know and don't trust, blah, 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 and internet safety. But it's just really nice that there's a way to do that where you can take care of yourself and and make new friends. And I love it.
So cool. There was a video I saw online of, like a group of fans got together at Bright Park before the last show. And
they had a little Max on a skateboard thing.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people have asked a lot about the difference between the New York audiences and the LA audiences. And I don't know if there is a huge difference, but I think people are interested in the idea that we've come to LA now with Peter Pan Goes Wrong, and it's theatre. Because LA is La La Land. It's known for Hollywood and TV and film, obviously, fantastically. Mm. But we've brought theatre.
Yeah, I mean, there's not tons and tons of theatre here, as you say. And I think, I think hopefully people are enjoying the show.
It seems to be going down quite well.
Yeah.
I think it's been a really... It's an unusual time to be here in LA because all of Hollywood is essentially on strike. So the writers are on strike and the actors are on strike, all the SAG members. And I think that means that... I feel like people are really enjoying the show in the sense that maybe there's a bit of frustration and not necessarily doom and gloom, but it's a trying time for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think that a show that is just silly... I found that in general recently, though, because there's quite a lot of stuff in life at the moment that's quite challenging and quite difficult and maybe anxiety is, for most people, for one reason or another, is a little higher than it has been in the last kind of 5 or 6 years. The work is really appreciated because it is just silliness and joy for the sake of doing that. So I've found that the audiences here have been really, receptive and like from the like sometimes you've got to kind of preheat the oven and the show builds.
Yeah.
And I would say here, like they've started at kind of 400 degrees, you know, they're really hot to the touch from the top.
My goodness.
And it's been so full, right? Not that we're touching
the audience.
Okay. Promise, do come and see the show. We will not touch you.
But you ask us to. But even in that
even
case,
then we won't.
It's within reason.
I have a thermometer and I'll check you. But it's, I think that's been a really nice thing. And the audience is large here. Like, so the Ethel Barrymore
in
was just over 1,000 people. And here, it's just over 2,000 people.
Yeah.
And we've been pretty much sold out for almost every show. So I really like playing very large houses. I think it's super, super fun. I totally get when you're in a 350, 400 seat, you get that intimacy where you can do a tiny little look and everyone can see that. But there's something so joyous about playing these places where it's huge. And I think as well there's a kind of confidence in numbers from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're able to just kind of lose yourself a lot quicker because you're just part of this.
You're a
little
more anonymous, right?
Exactly. So you can really just laugh yourself silly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas maybe if there's 300 people or 400 people, it takes you a little time to lose yourself and feel mm-hmm. anonymous, mm-hmm. like you mm-hmm. said.
Mm.
Yeah. It does. It's like, I think people are like, oh, you know, no one goes to the theatre in LA. And you're right, maybe it's because people have a little bit more time on their hands, but they don't necessarily have more money because if they're not working. So it's not necessarily like that much easier. But I would say LA's been extremely positive and theatre going. And
really?
Well, we got to go to Disneyland Park.
We did. That was just a couple of days ago, yeah.
Yeah, and we met people who'd seen the show.
Yeah.
I met four different sets of people who'd seen the show. It was very strange and very cool. Two people who worked there, two sets of people who were theatre goers.
Yeah.
And clearly, you know, people in LA, they'll do it. If it's on, they'll come.
Yeah, absolutely. No, people have definitely been very kind of, very up for getting involved and coming along.
They're very vocal, I would say.
Very vocal, yeah. Very kind of excitable, very kind of... American audiences in general, very supportive of the character's journey, you know, of Max in particular, Lucy, you know. All that stuff, you know, they're really kind of behind them and they really like that that kind of element of the mm-hmm. you know, really rooting for the characters that go through some tough times. Yeah.
But I have a question for you, Henry, because... There is a speech at the top of Act Two of Peter Pan Goes Wrong that is a little darker.
Yes.
It talks about the death of a child.
It does, yeah.
It's not funny,
yeah,
but it is funny. And in the UK, I've got to say, that goes down very well because our British audiences are, they like the darker side of things. How have you found it? I've had a few people say, how is that going down in America? And I would love to know, because obviously I'm not there while it's happening. I'm behind the behind the curtain.
Honestly, like I think I in New York, I think it didn't land as well.
Really?
Here in LA, I'm finding it's okay. It's a little better, but like a New York, particularly a matinee in New York, it was a little tricky. I think
with all the children.
Yeah, because you kind of so the speech basically is, if you haven't seen the show, it's like Robert comes out at the top of Act Two and just so he says that he's going to stall for some time, and Chris says, you're going to speak for some time. He's like, oh yes, of course, and he just talks a little bit about technical difficulties we're facing, and then he says Peter Pan obviously took a fall at the end of Act One, and he'll be okay. His injuries are certainly less severe than those sustained during the first act of our production of Oliver the Musical, and goes on to explain that Mr. Bumble fell over on top of a child and crushed him. And Robert had parked in the ambulance bay and the paramedics couldn't get to the boy in time. And so he sadly passed. That's the line.
I like that you've essentially done the entire
I have just done the
It's been amazing.
I'm a
with
British
other
films.
Yeah. Not much, though.
No, not much. But that's how it is.
I think your abridging has kind of made it longer in a weird way.
Really, yeah. I've unbridged it, but and so that bit, that line of like, sadly he passed, you know, is I've not really thought about actually how shocking it is, but obviously it is quite shocking that this kid died in a production of the thing, and of course
later
you
pass or
Because, we all changed
how I've done it because of the audience. And so a lot of, usually in the UK, big laugh there. But in New York, people are just a bit more like, you get a few gasps and you get people being like once someone was just like, why? Like people were like, like they're confused. As to why are you telling this? What have you done? And like it's I think just like there's such a kind of sincere earnestness. Mm. Whereas I think in the UK maybe it's a sit back kind of, you view it as more of a sort of
a joke.
I think you just see it in a different way. Like
well, we just sort of know it's not. I don't know. Of course, the audiences in America know it's not true.
They know it's not real, but they're just somehow more kind of in the thing, and they don't want to see suffering in the same way.
Yes.
Like in the US version of The Office, like in the UK version of The Office, there's that classic bit of David Brent doing the dance, and everyone in the office is gathered around, they're watching, and they're mortified, and it's excruciating, and he kind of does it, and it kind of tails off and peters out, and all that is just left to hang out there like a horrible kind of thing. In the US office, they would never do that, I don't think.
No.
They would never have Michael Scott being so kind of like exposed,
and obviously
he embarrasses himself, but it's done in a cleaner, less sort of, there's less suffering in it.
Yeah,
and I think that's the thing that is the difference, I think, in sort of taste. But I have found it different here, like with the past line. I've done it like I've in the UK. I try and do it as a real sort of like, he sadly, you know, passed, and really kind of try and, you know, really remember that moment of like how sad that was, and kind of, and people like that, I think. But
yeah,
here
in England, they laugh because it's so like awkward and shocking.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people are comfortable to be like, it didn't really happen, it's okay, we can laugh at this.
Yeah,
but here it's weird. And so here I've tried to play it more, I've thrown the past away a bit more, so like, he sadly passed, you know, and kind of do do a bit more of a kind of like, oh yeah, no, that happened, sorry about that, but you know, moving on, and kind of tried to sort of soften it that way.
Yeah,
and I think that works a little better, but it is tricky. Mm-hmm. It's definitely trickier here.
Yeah, it is. And it, there's just some more sort of I don't know if this is fair. I mean, obviously, all of this is slightly generalised, but in the UK, we quite like to watch people in pain. Our favourite thing is to watch the idiot, like, get his comeuppance. So people really latch on to Chris Bean, you know, losing it and bad things happening to him, and we enjoy that. I mean, don't get me wrong, the Americans enjoy that too. But the soppy stuff, British audiences can tend to be less excited by that. We're like, oh yeah, soppy stuff, cool.
Bit too saccharine, people feel.
Bit too saccharine, maybe. Yep. Whereas in the US, like, it's just a lot of joy, that sort of a support of the hope, support of that hero's story, that, you know, overcoming the obstacles and the good guy getting what they deserve in the good way, which is really, really sweet. And I'll miss that, I think. I love how they get behind Lucy, whereas in the UK we love that Lucy just gets more and more hurt.
Yeah. No, it is so funny. I guess just in the US it's more like, I guess everyone's reference points are more like, you know, Disney movies, a classic Hollywood American movies where it is kind of, there's a happy ending and that's how it is. Whereas in the UK it's more like Fawlty Towers, Blackadder, things with a harder edge, perhaps.
No, totally. I was just going to say, I think that, again, huge generalisation, but I think that in the UK, we find failure quite funny.
Schadenfreude.
Yeah, that there's more of that. And just like, we're happy in those moments of pain. Whereas I found in the US, maybe, just like you two said, people want the winner. Our producer said, well, we like winners out here. And I think there is a kind of truth to that. They don't really want to see someone embarrassed or lose. So the audiences, as a result, are super supportive out here. Like, there's bits where people would just laugh at you in the UK, and like, it almost feels a little mean, but it's not, because
we're asking them to do that.
Yeah, there's an implicit contract, right, about what we're doing. Whereas here, a really good moment is at the moment we've got the delightful Bradley Whitford with us.
Wonderful.
Mm.
And one of the things that his kind of take on the narrator character is that he's only here because there's a strike, and he's a bit jaded and a bit too good for all this. But this is all he can
do. I love, by the
way,
that he's made that choice. I think that's so great.
Which is super funny. And he's kind of really happy to send himself up as the kind of egotistical actor.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, as it goes on, he gets more and more humiliated. And there's this bit where he gets heard off mic talking about how humble he is as a performer and how he's full of humility, but also, like, why on earth is he performing with these amateurs? Mm. And then he walks out, and the joke is he's carrying all the awards he's won in his career. So he's carrying all his Emmys and stuff. And, the, you know, the joke is obviously that's not very humble. And I find the response to that so interesting, because I think if you did that in the UK, people would laugh at the fact that he's... The joke there is it suggests that he just walks backstage and he's so... You know, he's so fragile that he needs to hold his awards as soon as he goes backstage and he's polishing them. And I think that would get a huge laugh. Whereas in the US, he comes out and there is a huge moment of applause and everyone just celebrates genuinely, earnestly and full-heartedly the fact that he's won all these awards. Yeah. And I can't see a world in the UK where everyone would be like, oh, bravo, you're a success. I think people would laugh at that and really want to see that character taken down a couple of pegs.
Yeah.
Whereas here, there's just, I don't think that's, that doesn't seem to be in the locker. People are really happy that he's won those things and kind of want them to be brought back out more so they can continue to celebrate them.
I would say that, like it's definitely, there's no sort of better or worse thing. It's that, I think what's amazing about the American culture that I've experienced so far is the bravery to be joyful, the bravery to celebrate. So I find like, in the UK, or personally, it's quite a vulnerable thing in a way to actually stand there bare and go, I'm really proud of this thing, or I really love this thing, or this is wonderful. We're either afraid that we're inviting disaster, that we're tempting fate, that we're going to get our comeuppance for being a bit too excited or happy about this thing, or we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Oh, a good thing's coming, that means a bad thing's coming. Or, you know, don't be too big for your boots, don't get ahead of yourself. And so you're scared, and so we don't do it.
Yeah.
Whereas Americans are sort of brave in their ability, it's quite vulnerable to be joyful.
It's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Something we found is, with interviews and stuff, it's quite British to be kind of, to be quite...
Self-deprecating,
modest, kind of, I guess, maybe more.
Yeah, when they say, oh, you guys are doing amazingly, aren't you amazing? And we go, oh, you know, yeah.
You do, it's definitely British to be like, oh, no, and throw that away. And I think sometimes, weirdly, that here, like in the US, comes off slightly as rudeness.
Yeah, I think so.
Almost like you're not accepting the other person's positivity of what you're doing.
And I think that is true in a way. It's kind of rude. I've thought about that more and more. Like, when we say, oh, no, it was actually rubbish. Oh, no, it wasn't that good. It's like, well, that other person took the time to pay you a compliment, and they're saying that they think it's really good. And so if you brush that off, you're actually undermining that they liked it, which is kind of mean.
Yeah.
So I've definitely learned a lot more from being here in the States to go, oh, thank you. I'm really glad you liked it. Yeah, you know what? I'm really proud of it too. And that's okay. You're not being arrogant. There's a grey area between, you know, painfully humble and overtly arrogant. There's a nice middle ground where you can be both, where you can have perspective and you can be, you know, have your feet on the ground, but you're also, oh, it's okay to say, yeah, I'm really proud of it. And I think that's changed within the company whilst we've been here. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm really, really proud of Peter Pan Goes Wrong. I'm really, really proud. I've been on Broadway twice. That's awesome.
Mm.
I don't think I innately deserved it.
Yeah.
And I don't take it for granted.
Mm-mm.
But we are lucky. A lot of luck came into this journey because, you know, without luck, it doesn't matter. It's sort of one of those things we talk about a lot, but you need the three things. You need the talent, you need the hard work, but you also need the luck. And if you're missing one, it doesn't quite work. I know lots of people with lots of talent and who work really hard, but if you don't get the break that you can then take advantage of with your hard work and your talent, it's a really tricky business.
For sure, definitely.
We got a bit deep.
We did.
Philosophical, because of the Americans. You know,
quick, let's make it lighthearted. A banana trouser.
Yes, we're British and we cannot sit in how emotionally open we're being.
No, I agree with all that. I totally agree with what you've just said there.
Oh, well, thanks. I appreciate that. There you go. I'm getting better at it. All right, I've got some silly little questions.
Silly little questions.
So actually, seeing as you did share a dressing room in New York, this is still going to work.
Mm-hmm.
In your dressing room, this is a game I played with Ellie and Matt and Harry. We did a kind of Mr. and Mrs. and Mrs. and Mr. dressing room quiz where we previously answered the questions and like separately from each other and then found out what the other person had said in the moment. But this time, I'm just going to quick fire, and if you disagree, then you will have to fight with the bear claw. In your dressing room, who is the first in the dressing room?
Ooh.
I think that...
Who's the first to get there?
Oh, it really depends.
It depends. It depends, yeah, definitely. Well, in New York, in between shows, I quite often headed back to my place. So maybe John, probably, I would say.
Yeah, I kind of stayed. Evenings. Yeah, once I was in for the day, I was kind of in for the day.
Yeah, it was the same, yeah. Okay, interesting. Who's the messiest?
Oh. Ooh.
Two, one.
John.
Maybe me. But, I'd say I'm really quite specific about where everything goes. So I'm quite neat, but I can be really bad with forgetting. I lose stuff. So my neatness is a coping mechanism for the fact that otherwise just everything ends up all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I would say that I'm quite ordered and weirdly in my head, I'm very ordered and methodical. But maybe to the outside, untrained eye, I look like a kind of chaos machine.
Okay. Who out of the two of you is most likely to start a riot?
Start a riot?
Yeah, who's the truculent one?
Maybe me, but I probably wouldn't start a riot.
No.
But I don't think either of us are likely to do that, but... Maybe me, I don't know, or maybe you, I don't know.
I don't know. We're both pretty moderate understanding men. So there's not, we're more likely to, write a formal letter of, write an email.
Really, a very sort of gently but firmly written email.
Than a riot, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's more my route to solving a problem.
Who's going to start a riot if anyone starts a riot in the group? Cast, crew.
From Peter Pan Goes Wrong team.
Yeah, he's going to start a riot. I've got Matt Cavendish. Absolutely. fucking monster.
Stephen Anthony. Because he's so quiet and calm. But under that, I imagine, you could come in and he's just destroyed the place.
He could definitely organise us into quite a well-oiled rioting machine.
Yeah. Yep.
Stephen was in our podcast, the Understudy podcast, and he would get us all to play games in between shows, and he was very good at sort of sorting group things. So I imagine if he decided that what, as a group, we should do was have a riot, it would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Organised, yeah, yeah.
Who smells the best?
Me, because I wear quite a lot of cologne.
Very
good.
Do you? Yeah, absolutely.
I can do, yeah. And I'm always, I use that sun bum shower gel. So I always smell kind of like the beach at
you
the moment.
You do, you are beach.
Not that you smell bad, Hen, but
I'm often wearing
like scent.
Scent? Who takes the longest to get ready?
The longest to get ready for the show. Well, probably me, but then I've got kind of a more complicated costume.
Yeah, that's okay. There's no judgment here. There's a reason.
A human onion over here compared to...
a lot of layers.
Whereas you're just wearing a nightie.
I just wear like a bag, essentially. It's like a little linen bag. That I tell you a difference, though, is Hen gets ready very quickly, very early for a show and likes to kind of be in costume well ahead of time, very prepped. I like to wait until the last possible second to get ready. So I don't really get ready until a couple of minutes before I'm
extremely stressful, that, isn't it?
That really stresses me out.
To be like, just to let the clock run down, in that way.
Why would you do that to yourself every day?
I find my costume quite drafty.
John.
You could have a robe.
John does have a robe. But
I do, mate.
But John, this is an interesting point. This maybe is slower than the quick questions, but
I'm okay with this.
Okay, so John, until very recently, mainly in London, I think not so much in New York. No, actually, maybe in the first New York run, Play That Goes Wrong 2017, maybe as well. John would enjoy going out, into the street after the half hour call. So if you're not familiar with theatre, you have a half hour call, which is actually 35 minutes before the show. And then you have a beginner's call at 5 minutes before. So the half is half an hour before beginners. And technically, everyone is supposed to be in the building.
The building is really bad.
John.
But John is always like, it's the half, I've got to go out, got to buy. And he goes out and buys a Twix or some sort of snack.
Even this run, I'd go to Krispy Kreme's, which was nearby, and I'd bring back a full company box of donuts or something, but goodness, I do like to leave it late.
Donuts were masking the fact that you were, you know, flouting the rules. Flaunting? Flouting. Yeah. Flouting is just playing the flute. You love playing those rules like a flute.
Oh my God.
But, I can't believe it.
But you would sign in and then you'd be AWOL. And, I didn't even know if the stage management team knew.
No,
but,
no, of course they don't. Now it's going to be broadcast.
Now they know.
I like to be
We're coming to the end.
I quite like to be very stimulated, particularly before going on stage. I like there to be lots of like noise, and I quite like to do emails before the show or like read a book, or I quite like to have a lot going on. I find that that means that I'm more likely to kind of be like comedically inspired, so I quite like it to feel quite, so I sometimes like will impose a sense of
anxiety
of like madness before, although I've kind of stopped doing that a little bit, because also I try and keep that separate to me, so that backstage I'm reasonably calm, and you know, I'm not running around, but I don't like to just kind of sit there until 5 minutes before I go on, and then everything goes quiet. I have a little moment, and then out we go.
No, I'm very, very different. Yeah, I think. I'm more like you, Chaz. I think I like calm. Quite often before the show, I'd be about 5 minutes before we start, and I'd be like, "Have a good show, John," and I'd leave the dressing room to go downstairs. John's still in his own clothes, halfway through a sort of like takeaway curry, writing an email. And you'd be like, "What's going to happen in the next 5 minutes to get you on stage?"
Yeah, that's not my way of doing things. I mean, I know what you mean about I don't want to necessarily sit in the quiet and then go on cold, but I like to be ready, and then I sort of wander around seeing people and chatting to people and making sure I've seen everyone before I go on, and I quite like that little build-up. But I know makeup, hair, wig, costume, all done. Mm-hmm. I prefer that. Okay, this is fascinating. Who of the two of you has the best hair? 3, 2, 1.
I would say John, I think. Yeah.
I think you both have excellent hair. Heads of hair.
Well, thanks very much.
Got facial hair. You've got a great beard as well.
This is true.
Double hair. Yeah.
I've only got single hair. I can't really grow anything on my below the nose.
and above
the chin.
Neck.
Yeah, above the neck, not above the chin.
I'm just trying to imagine that now. who spends the most time on social media? Neither of you are particularly a slave to it.
I try and spend less time on it, because it does freak me out, kind of how it can be quite addictive and kind of creep into your life and you spend a lot of time on it. But
I think we both go through phases where we get quite hooked.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Who's the grumpiest of the two of you?
I think you're more grumpy than me, but I wouldn't say you're grumpy.
Maybe it is me. Yeah, I could be grumpy.
Were you going to say me?
I don't know. You have moments of being frustrated with things, but
I can get I'll get a bee in my bonnet about thing.
Yeah.
I'm more like I can. You're quite phlegmatic. Is that the right word? Phlegmatic about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you can be more like
brood.
Yeah, you can brood over something that will. If something winds you up, I would say that you would brood over it, which I suppose to me is grumpy. Whereas I would be like, and then it's gone.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know,
so the bee and the brood.
I think we get annoyed.
Next show.
I think we get annoyed by similar stuff, like just like things that just unfairnesses in life.
Yeah.
You know, that's that kind of thing. Things that are frustrating, where like you know that kind of thing. Yeah.
I totally get it. Okay, who's the boss in your dressing room?
Who's the boss?
Yeah, who's the boss?
It's quite egalitarian, I'd say, in the dressing room.
Oh, I like it. I like that. Yeah. I think me and Ellie were sort of tied.
Mm.
No, I don't think one of us is dominant.
But it was very funny because in Matt and Harry's, I'm pretty sure Matt was like, "It's me. I am the boss."
Oh, definitely. I've heard Harry, stop that now.
Well, Harry,
I've genuinely heard. Harry, it's time to put on your trousers.
That's the thing. Yeah. Harry needs management. He's always just singing some number.
He's always making a lot.
Singing
literally down
ballads.
The hall. You'll just have "I'm a Barbie girl in a Barbie world," singing songs in the most aggressive and like horrible on the ear way.
Yeah.
They do in their dressing room a thing that.
I don't understand this, and I don't know how much I enjoy it.
They do a song where they always
love it.
Yeah,
and I'm like, why do you all love that? Why is that like a thing now?
But it's like a song where they go, at the end of every line. Yeah. That seems to be, I'm a Barbie girl.
This is a big lawyer. And I'd be like, what? Why are you all screaming in there?
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
But you're saying that like that's a logical base. Well, like, of course, it started from this. Yeah, but that's nonsense.
It's so funny. It is so funny.
It is very funny.
I don't know why it really gets me. But what really gets me now is that they both got COVID at the same time. They both went off. And honestly, everyone was like, gosh, it's very quiet around here.
It was. It's so peaceful and calm.
And then they came back on the first day. Everyone was quite shocked because all we could hear was, ay, yeah, yeah! Ay, yeah, yeah!
That's how insane it's got. That wasn't even on the end of a thing. That was just on its own.
Matt will be like, oh, yes, Harry does that all the time. Yes, I have to tell him to be quiet. I'm like, Matthew Cavendish, you absolute liar. He's such a culprit. He'll be like, it's time to go, Shall we have... we have this tradition where he offers everybody a curiously strong mint before the show. He'd be like, Amy, would you like something curiously strong, A little minty. It is so bizarre.
Harry also very much enjoys screaming a Wagamama ramen as well. That's a one I really...
A Wagamama ramen.
The listeners here are going to be like, what?
What
a picture we're painting of backstage. You've got two blokes just screaming. You've got another man like stealthily running out to buy a Twix.
Like, Stephen James Anthony organising some kind of coup.
Yeah.
It's excellent. No, it's really very silly.
It is very silly.
And obviously you always have a fist fight.
I'm always having a fist fight. You know I'm so confrontational. Well, that's excellent. Okay. Other than the understudies, and this is now about everyone, who would you say of the British cast is the most assimilated to the US lifestyle? Who's the most American?
Interesting.
You were up there, Charlie.
I would say you too, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what? So would I. Isn't that weird? I was writing this question down, and then I thought, I think the answer is me. Is that egotistical?
No, I think...
I didn't know it until I'd written the question.
You really love being here. And I do. I think it fits in to your... I don't know, like it just fits in with a lot of your personality and it just seems to lend itself to you, the kind of culture here. I find that I feel like I fit in and assimilate in New York very well. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm a natural Californian.
Yeah. I'm yet to find out about my Californian-ness, but I know what you mean.
I've enjoyed both places a lot. I think... I struggle with the heat slightly, I think. Mm-hmm. Actually, easier here in LA.
It is, isn't it?
It's sort of, there's not the same humidity in New York over the summer. The humidity is so intense.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing. It's obviously not, the sun is nice, but when it gets to 30, 33, it's just a bit crazy.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's the only thing I struggle with, really.
I like the heat, so I find it a little easier. But you're right. In New York, it was quite challenging at times. But I think you're right. I think I like as we were talking about earlier. I quite like that if with many Americans or at least New Yorkers and Californians, an emotional openness and a ready to kind of have quite a talk about one's feelings quite brave and open, and I like that, and I'll quite quickly get into a very deep conversation with people about stuff. Because sometimes I feel like in the UK, everyone's like, Charlie, stop talking about therapy and how good it is, or like, please stop talking about your emotions. Whereas here I'm like, aha, they're up for this, which I really enjoy.
Yeah.
But also I like in New York that people, we're talking about it, there's a phrase about New Yorkers, they are maybe not polite, but they are kind. And I think all that really means is that they're quite direct. So if in the UK you ask someone, do you want to come for a drink? And the person doesn't really want to come. They'll say, oh, yeah, maybe, mate. Oh, I might have to leave because of, I need to get the bus. And they'll try and like, I'd love to. And it's just a lot of kind of worrying about that. And then we don't really say... that actually I'm just tired. Whereas in New York, like, you want to come for a drink? They go, oh, no, thank you. I'm going to go home. And they don't even necessarily give you a reason. They just say, no, thanks.
Mm.
And it's not personal, but it's very clear. I like that a lot.
No, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
No, it's,
but you're right, I don't know enough about LA, I'd say. I mean, I've been here a bit, but I'm still learning.
I like the pace of New York. I like the fact that there's always something happening, and there's such a hot to the touch intensity.
Stop touching about the American
about the people there. No, yeah, it's been great.
Okay. I mean, someone was saying the other day, I think it's true, there's kind of as much going on in LA as there's as much to do in LA as there is in New York. But because it's just such a big, spread out city, it doesn't have the same feel. And you literally can't walk really anywhere. You know, everything is kind of, anything you want to kind of go and do is between a half an hour to an hour drive.
I feel like that aids you better, because I would say that particularly like in regards to like excursions and fun, you can be quite planned. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm more kind of impulsive. So what I really like about New York is that you can just get up, leave your apartment and find a thing and be like, oh, I fancy that museum. Or, oh, that sounds good. Whereas here you can't really do that. You have to be like, I will get a taxi and I will go 4, 7, 8, 12 miles out or whatever to this thing. I thought, interestingly, the way that both of you did Disneyland spoke volumes about your characters, because you were both on the app, you both, you know, were very like regimented. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, then I'll go here. Whereas my,
in comparison, very regimented. I mean, I for Charlie Russell, I was pretty chill.
Still very regimented.
I just don't want to aimlessly wander.
You were both constantly doing stuff.
Yeah, no, I
had a schedule there.
Well, I don't mind. Aimlessly wandering is fine if that's kind of the plan for that bit of the day. The only thing I didn't want to do, because I didn't make a plan in advance to be like, this is what I'm going to do all day. The only thing I didn't want to do was just queue for hours and hours and hours for everything, which is you can end up doing.
And you can get to every ride and go, oh no, actually, this is too long and I can't get on. And so we'll go to the next one and then the same thing keeps happening.
So,
you know, we use the app.
Highly recommend the app. The app worked well, didn't it? And you can book rides for different times. And
You have to pay extra for that. But you can main go, okay, we're around 7, we'll go to this ride. Mm. And so then you can start planning things and you can order your food to just be there when you go to pick it up rather than standing in line. But you're right. But then I also stayed till close. Which was surprising for me. I don't know how I managed it, but I did. It was Greg Tannehill.
You two had a great time.
We had the best time. He's my park husband. I'm his park wife, and that's how it's going to be from now on.
That's fair. I just kind of blew. I went where the wind blew me.
Well, that's good.
That's nice.
At the theme park.
But then you've been really
And then I got
good.
Very lost.
You did get very lost without a phone, which, you know, was slightly terrifying at one point, but then we were fine. But you've been really good while we've been here at going, guys, I'm going to this place tomorrow. Who wants to come? So you've done well because you like to go out at making sure that happens. I imagine it's easier if we had our own cars and if we drove, but you drive, John. I'm not very good. And you don't love it, do you?
No, I haven't driven for many. I've got a driving license, but I haven't driven for years, so.
Maybe that would allow a little more freedom.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Get a car. But, you know, an electric one. Good for the environment. What tradition or practice or thing from America would you like to keep going back in the UK? It could be to do with the show, or it could be I'm tempted to get a drip coffee machine because I love it.
I have enjoyed cold brew coffee. But that's great. Very strong. You feel awesome all the time. But until you feel jittery and paranoid because you've had so much coffee. No, I think the thing that I would bring back is I think that there's, particularly in New York, because on Broadway the theatres are so densely packed on top of each other. So like the West End is actually quite a wide-reaching area, whereas Broadway really is this little bubble of theatres, and I think that means that there's slightly more sense of community. Like there's more like inter-show hangouts and like mini softball leagues from the shows, and like, there's this thing called Dollar Friday where everyone puts in a dollar. And there's like, I often remark that the tannoy of the show sometimes feels more like a cruise ship.
Yeah,
but, you know, it's like there's an ice cream social over at 6 today, and I'd love some of that to come back over to the UK where the shows hang out and there's ice cream, or there's like, you know, there's beers at da 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 for the 200th show of whatever.
Woman, and we're all gonna go. Yeah, that would be nice.
And I think there's more awards and like which isn't my bag, but like there's more things where I think people are together, and I'd love to bring back some of the organised sense of community.
Organised fun, John.
A little bit of organised fun
there.
Yeah, well, maybe you could take on. Maybe you could bring the community.
I will bring the community of the West End together.
Yeah,
That's my task.
Definitely do it. Yeah, excellent. Yeah. For sure. Something about the U.S., and this is not something I've experienced, but it is something about the U.S. that I think is a cool thing. Well, it's obviously it's a tradition, and there's obviously history behind it and everything. But everyone talks about Thanksgiving very fondly here, and getting together with people that you love and talking about things that you're thankful for, positive stuff.
Yeah,
that's a really cool holiday, I think. And that's a nice thing. It's not about gifts and stuff.
Yeah,
there's no kind of. It's just kind of. It's everyone gets together, has lunch, and talks about the stuff that is positive in their lives. And I think that's a cool, fun thing, that seems like a nice day.
Oh, that is really nice. All right, I've got two more questions. One, and this is a quick one. One thing in LA you'd now recommend to a visitor. So either to do or to try or to eat or whatever, you know.
Absolutely. Well, I recommend the California Science Center, which I went to a couple of weeks ago. It's absolutely amazing. So, it's a huge museum with loads of different stuff. But they have an IMAX cinema with 3D documentary films about all sorts of different stuff, space travel, conservation of blue whales. That was really amazing. They also have the Endeavour Space Shuttle there from the Space Shuttle program. You can go and see the actual shuttle and learn about the history of that. Loads of other cool kind of permanent exhibits as well. A cool exhibit about Mayan history also currently on there.
Oh, cool.
I enjoyed the Broad Art Gallery.
Which I thought was the Broad.
No, it's the Broad because it's
somebody's
two
name.
People and they are huge philanthropists, so they buy a lot of art and they give it back to LA. So it's,
that's so cool.
It's the Broads. And also the Mr. Brainwash art gallery in Beverly Hills, which I thought was so kind of LA.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite like cool art and kind of lots of like pop culture mixed with kind of classic art and stuff that me and Hen went to. And then also The Great White, which is a restaurant that me and you have been to, Charlie.
Yeah, oh,
that,
very
that's
nice.
Great breakfast. You asked for one, but there's
two. Well, I might suggest that people take the day to go to Santa Monica Pier and the beach.
Yeah. That was
it's
lovely.
Really lovely. Just make sure if you can bring a parasol-y type thing if that's what you want, because they're not dotted on the beach. But there's lots of stuff around and it's really, really nice. Quite family friendly, it feels. Because we went with Nancy and her child and it was delightful.
Totally.
All right, now this is a bit of a weird one and I'm not entirely sure I've got it, you know, I've worded it correctly, but it's the middle of the night.
Right.
And something turns up at your window asking you to come to Neverland. They're from our cast or crew. Who are you least surprised by? Who is it most likely to be?
So the person at the window is someone from the cast or crew.
Yeah, and then it turns out they're like, they can fly.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
like, come
yeah.
with me, mate.
Harry Kershaw, I could imagine.
Yes, very
just kind
good.
Of just secretly being able to fly.
Oh my goodness, that would be so dangerous.
Mm.
I think it's got to be Greg.
Yeah, Greg, for sure. Greg.
If anyone can fly, it's Greg.
It could be Greg, yeah.
He's like a superhero.
I think it could be... I think it could be Bartley.
Bartley Booz, you're so right.
Yeah. I think that would kind of be... He's kind of got that sort of boyish kind of charm that like a Peter Pan kind of...
I imagine as well, so Blair Baker's come and joined us in LA and they... We don't know them as well, and so that makes me think, oh, maybe they're the one with the magical powers. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
All right, so actually, if you're in Neverland and you have to stay there, like, what gang are you joining? You know, are you a pirate? Are you a mermaid? Are you a lost boy? Like, what's your patch?
I would say a lost boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
I can see you as a good pirate.
But you've got to be mean if you're a pirate, right?
Yeah, that's
I wouldn't
true.
Want to be mean to people.
But... And that's true. We've established none of us are going to start a riot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you couldn't be a pirate.
Pirates aren't big on like forms and emails either.
No, I mean,
are Lost Boys?
They don't.
I don't know if anyone is.
No. I suppose there's not a lot of paper trailing.
Would you describe yourself as big on forms?
Yeah, that's my. Yeah.
That's really my.
Small on riot, big on forms.
You go to the bank, they're like, can you fill this out? You're like, absolutely yes.
Oh. Actually, no, I'd say I'm quite bad with stuff. I'm constantly having issues with that kind of stuff, I would say.
Oh.
Bad form, that's what Hook
bad
says.
Bad form, Peter. Bad form. Are you a Lost Boy as well?
Yeah, or if the mermaids have rollerblades, like in our show, yeah, then I would do that because I quite like blading about.
That's very cool. I think I'd like to be a mermaid or a Lost Boy, or maybe a fairy.
Yeah. Nice.
But then
the
fairies are so small, they can only have one feeling at a time, and I have so many that it's going to be like a constant sort of roller coaster of one to another.
It would be. But then in a way, that would be quite good, wouldn't it?
Like, just calm,
simpler life. You know. Yeah.
And fairies are little vengeful creatures.
They are quite kind of like, yeah, quite
nasty
often
little things.
Jealous or kind of devious in stories.
Yeah, so maybe I'm using this opportunity to expand. Grow into a different area of my personality that I haven't explored yet.
I think if I could choose any character to be from the sort of J.M. Barrie canon,
yeah,
it would maybe be the Neverbird.
Yeah.
It sadly doesn't feature in Peter Pan Goes Wrong.
It saves Peter from Marina's Rock.
Yeah. The Neverbird's very cool.
Neverbird's really cool. Yeah, that's a good one. Well, I always thought I'd want to be Tink because she's a fairy and she has magical powers. But then I want to be Wendy because it's super fun. And she's pretty cool. Like, she will get out the sword and she'll do it. She'll do the fighting. Who would you be, John? Would you be John?
I quite like John. John's quite a cool character. Quite comfortable in that role.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure catching up and eating a bear claw and, you know, deciding how we might start a riot. I appreciate it. And thank you, everyone who's been listening to the podcast in America. It's been an absolute joy to do, and I hope you've been enjoying following our antics as we go around the United States of America. It won't be long now until we're back into the UK.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Thanks,
what a joy.
Yeah,
what an expert, an expert presenter you are.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoy it. I hope to do more, actually. So you never know. So thank you, listeners. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Follow us on all the different socials, and you can subscribe to the podcast on your podcast getting platform. That's a phrase. And I'm sure we will speak to you very shortly. Take care.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.